All right. We are? Good. Well, usually about this time we start off a show with a guest, but our guest is late. And so I'm just going to talk to you guys and answer questions. So for all of our viewers out there, welcome. Corey, somebody can go get her. She just showed up. I'll just keep talking and we'll just go on. If anyone has any questions for me, I'm happy to answer some questions while we wait for our guests to come in. If they want to know about the Microsoft BizSpark show, or if they want to know about BizSpark, which is the no-cost program for developers and founders who are developing software in the cloud or apps for the phone, we offer you guys, I guess, about $15,000 worth of software at no cost for 3 years while you build up a relentlessly awesome startup. In the past, we've talked to some of our startup founders, and those people have, Evernote was a BizSpark member, an early BizSpark member, and I don't speak Spanish. What does esto, esta, en vivo mean? Is this real life? Is that what? Is this live? Yes, it's live. That's what it means. Yeah. How is BizSpark going unaffected by the reorg at Microsoft? Of course it's unaffected by the reorg at Microsoft. It actually hasn't even changed. Microsoft BizSpark now sits underneath an umbrella. Actually, this happened a while ago before this massive reorg that you're referring to. It's underneath an organization called Microsoft Ventures, and what BizSpark does is BizSpark introduces... Oh, hi. Tracy Lee is here. Have a seat. Have a seat. Should walk right in front of camera.
Oh, sorry.
It's okay. It's not like anybody watches to see me. They just watch to listen to me. You're going to want... You can take off your thing. Yeah. And you'll scoot this way so you can talk right in front of...
Oh, that's perfect.
Yeah. You want to get really close to the microphone?
Like this?
And you can scoot the microphone close to you so it can pick up your voice. Can you hear Kenny? I was just saying, yeah, so Microsoft Ventures is the program that works with a global network of accelerators. Currently, I think it's like 4 cities. You may have heard about it. They're in Paris, and they're in Berlin, Germany. I was just in Berlin where we opened up an accelerator there.
Is it a Microsoft accelerator?
Yeah, there's one in Berlin, and there's also one in Paris called Spark Labs or something like that.
And I have heard about this.
You have heard about this. Yeah, it means you've been paying attention to the press.
Yeah.
Yes? So without further ado, we'll go into all that stuff later. You guys know what BizSpark is. We're talking with Tracy Lee, who... How old is Dishcrawl? You're the CEO of this company?
Yes. I started it 3.5 years ago.
3.5 years ago.
Yes.
And for people who don't know what Dishcrawl is, it's dishcrawl.com. Dishcrawl is basically in 125 cities. Mm-hmm. It is a kind of a ambassador-led program for foodies, basically, mm-hmm. but people who want to organize communities around food events. And I think you got started, and you're going to have to walk me through the narrative of this,
mm-hmm.
but I think you got started basically just having like a bunch of people would get together, and you'd go to like 4 restaurants in an evening or something mm-hmm. like that, and then hopefully you meet friends out of it, and... The local restaurants benefit from it. The ambassador benefits from it because they're taking some kind of a commission, I assume, from getting those people into the restaurant. Mm-hmm. And then the company benefits from it because you're growing out this network.
Yeah.
So why don't you walk us through, like, how did you come up with this idea?
Okay.
And maybe those of us who are listening out there can figure out how they would start their own competing business or non-competing business.
Yeah, of course. So just like anybody in the Silicon Valley or anywhere else, you know, I think everybody wants to do more than what they're doing.
Yeah.
And so I was, fresh out of college. It wasn't
Which college
my first
was that?
Startup. I went to San Jose State.
Oh, cool.
So local.
So you're completely local then. So when we talked about South Bay
local.
Startups,
yes.
You are like a Cupertino mm-hmm. or a San Jose.
Yep. Grew up in Cupertino.
Yeah.
Went to all the, you know, Furia, Monta Vista, all those typical high schools in Cupertino. Did some time. I don't know. I was doing
in prison.
No, but I did. You know, I did some time doing
someone says,
random things.
Someone says I did some time.
You know, I started a jewelry startup. I was doing a lot of like really random things, restaurant consulting. You know, focusing on boys for a little bit.
Okay,
and
good.
All those other
healthy pursuits.
Yeah, healthy.
But well, I noticed a ring on your finger. Yes. Does that mean that you finally settled on a boy?
Yes.
Oh, and who is he?
He, we've been friends for 2.5 years now. Okay. And, you know, he works at a tech company as well.
Okay.
So he was working at Playdom. They got acquired. He you know, started with the founders of Playdom. They're starting something else.
Okay.
And it's nice that, you know, I mean, 8:30 at night, none of us are home.
Yeah.
If I get home at 8:30, he's not home.
Yeah.
I sort of have the tendency to go, should I be upset about this? But then yeah. I realize, no, because I'm worse than him.
Yeah, you're worse than him. Yeah, you're living in a startup culture where
exactly.
you're working like probably 17, 18 hours
yeah.
or less, maybe yeah. 16 hours. Yeah.
But so I started off just doing a corporate job. So I was working yeah. at Brocade. Do you know Brocade?
Yes.
And sure. I was doing support revenue. And, you know, at such a large company, 4,000 people, you can't really mm-hmm. do much
other than the job that you're doing. Yeah, you're
exactly.
you're a cog in the wheel, right.
Exactly, and I didn't want to be that, so I decided to start Dish Crawl.
Okay.
And so I took the stock options I was granted when I was 25 from my mother,
mm-hmm.
and she almost had a heart attack. I cashed all of them out.
What exactly did she say? Did you tell her before you did it, or did you do it and then tell her?
I warned her a little bit, and she just said, oh my God, you know, I mean, the typical, like, you need to save for retirement type yeah. deal. But, you know, taking that step and taking $10,000 out of that and incorporating the company was the first step to actually really solidifying my partnerships with my first co-founders. Mm. And I was doing Dish Crawl part-time. So my day looked like 8 to 5 at work,
mm-hmm.
5 to 7 doing some random meetings or driving to a networking event.
Mm-hmm.
Then from 7 to 11 o'clock, I would be either at a networking event doing biz dev, or I would be at a coffee shop, Coffee Society in Cupertino, because they're open till 11 o'clock at night.
There's a nice plug for them.
Good. Yes.
Okay.
And
coffee shops induce creativity, so this is why people flock there.
This yeah. was the latest one. Awesome. Well, this is the one that was open the latest.
All right. So you're working well until the midnight hours.
Then
basically.
I'd go home, yeah. and then I'd stay. I'd be in bed working till 2 in the morning, and then I'd get up and do it again.
Wow.
And that was my life for about... until I actually figured out how to actually have a real business.
Hmm.
Because, you know, when you
start those off, two things are not the same.
No, it's not. No,
having an idea and actually building it into a business. This is the thing that,
yes,
like in the tech press, you often see a lot of excitement about, you know, companies getting rounds of financing or companies starting with angel financing or just bootstrap companies
right.
who have a great product.
Yeah.
But a great product or even a great idea, what we hardly ever know
yeah.
is that to really build a real business is exactly synonymous with migraines, strain,
and hard work, failing.
So what was the difference there? I mean, so Dish Crawl, I mean, basically, first of all, Dish Crawl has stayed pretty much the same idea. Was it always get people to go to great restaurants and form communities, or was it something else, and now is it this?
You know, actually, I wanted to start a tech startup. So I okay. found Twitter. I found OutWhat and, you know, this is like at the time when APIs were really exciting and yeah. mashups were really exciting.
This is like 2009?
This was 3.5, 4 years ago.
Okay. So about...
whenever that was.
That's about 2008, 2009.
Yeah. Actually, I found out about Twitter. I was at a conference at some cloud conference at the Mountain View Computer History Museum.
Uh-huh.
And somebody said, oh, somebody tweeted about you. I had no idea what it meant.
I had no idea what it was.
Yeah. And mm-hmm. so then I... got on this Twitter thing, mm-hmm. and then my life just completely changed. I mean, if it wasn't for Twitter...
So was Twitter responsible for the business getting started?
There were a lot of things responsible for getting the business started, but I definitely did not realize the opportunities that were out there
mm-hmm.
and the ability to reach whoever the heck I wanted
mm-hmm.
by just one tweet until I found Twitter.
Mm.
And that was a very significant change in my life.
So what was it in terms of like helping you build that as a business?
Right.
Let's answer the first question first. How did you know that you had actually figured out how to run it as a business?
Well, it started off, so the idea initially was
mm-hmm.
the initial idea was let's do a tech startup. I sort of went through a bunch of iterations of doing some random Facebook games and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
Then I came back from this trip and, you know, my co-founder at the time was, hey, why don't we do a food startup? Because
right.
I was food blogging and
that
all these
seems
other
very
things.
Vague though. So what?
Well, then we decided to create this game online. It was yeah. this adventure game for foodies, and the whole idea was you go and eat and then you get prizes by uploading a picture online. This was mm-hmm. like before the mobile thing sort of really
yeah.
blew up, right?
Yeah.
So that completely failed. You know, we launched it in May.
You say it with such humility.
Well, it did. Nobody cared about it.
Yeah.
You know, I had 300 people and really nobody cared. Mm-hmm. And so then I decided to do what I was already doing in my personal life, right? Mm-hmm. When friends come into town, I take them out to eat. We go to all my favorite restaurants.
Right.
And so I decided to throw an event.
Okay.
That did this.
Wow. And then how many people came to the first event?
So there were two crucial points. So in the beginning, when I actually realized that there was this dish crawl thing I could do, mm-hmm. It was like 40 people, and then I sort of hobbled along mm-hmm. from like May till January. Mm-hmm. Didn't make any money, had no idea, you know, just was throwing these events. People thought I was crazy, mm-hmm. but, you know, do what works, mm-hmm. right? Even though it's completely not a tech startup.
Did the restaurants... managers, did they even think you were crazy, or did they just say, oh great, business,
no.
let's come in, yeah, and have
exactly.
food,
yeah, okay. They just thought like, okay, whatever, you know, something's happening here,
yeah,
don't really care. Then I sort of took everything I learned from that year, and I remember January of 2011, so New Year's Eve of January, my boyfriend was very understanding. I am lucky to have very understanding boyfriends throughout my life, and I said, no, I don't want to go out, I want to work. And
really?
So
wow. okay.
throughout the night till 4 or 5 in the morning, I worked and hustled because I wanted to launch this event in January and test out this idea.
Right.
And so the first like really successful event was in downtown San Jose. Mm-hmm. 90 people came out. It wow. was crazy.
Yeah.
And that was the point when I realized like, oh, I could actually make money off of this.
Right.
And then I quit my job.
Then you quit your job. But
after
what was the thing that you did that made 90 people come? I mean, was it using Twitter and social, or was it marketing,
was,
or was it?
Yes. It was actually figuring out how the heck to market something.
Okay.
You know, I remember I would have to spend 1 hour on social media to generate one ticket sale from May till.
How did you measure that out? So you figured,
well, I
what
just
did
knew.
That mean?
Like, if I wanted 20 people to come, I'd have to spend 20 hours on social media.
Wow.
To get that to happen.
Wow.
And, you know, a lot of people get discouraged by that, but, you know, I mean, what else are you going to do, mm-hmm. right? You sort of go with what works and keep trying it until something breaks.
Something clicks,
or some,
yeah.
you know, something breaks in a good way.
Yeah.
And then in January, yeah, I mean, I spent a lot of time hustling and marketing and getting the word out.
Yeah.
And then the business just sort of exploded.
Okay. And yeah. so the signal, I guess I'm hearing two things. The mm-hmm. signal was, number one, it's kind of the things that a lot of investors look for, is that people look at the product and they think, oh, yeah, I want to be a part of this.
Mm-hmm.
And so you get a lot of large numbers to
right.
something. The second thing was, oh, I'm sensing that there was something there where you figured out, there's something in the marketing that I do for this
yes.
that triggers
yes.
people's points. Was that like an emotional hook, or was it pictures of the food, or was it meeting the people? Like, what do you think was the big hook for people to come in and try your service?
I think it was being able to accurately describe exactly what the heck we were doing.
Right.
So in the beginning, it was just like, hey, come out and eat. Mm-hmm. After I started doing a bunch of them, I realized that, hey, it wasn't just about going out and eating, even though that's what it started off
Interesting.
To be.
Right.
It was really about the fact that we were gathering a community. It mm-hmm. was really about the fact that, oh my gosh, you know, we're getting locals to get out and get to know the different mm-hmm. chefs and the owners mm-hmm. in the area.
Mm-hmm.
And shockingly, that is where the foundation of community is built.
Yeah.
And so then I realized, like, wow, we're doing so much more than just taking people out on food adventures. We're actually providing a foundation for community yeah. to be built.
And I think that you and I think we're what led to me, and excuse me while I read questions.
No worries.
Talking
of course.
Somebody just wanted you to know that spending 1 hour for one ticket on Twitter is still a very good conversion. So,
oh, yeah?
Yeah. Wow. I'm sure the time has reduced now because you've got such a vast network,
oh, yeah, totally.
Right? 125 cities.
Oh,
but
yeah.
The point I was going to make is, as you're describing that, I'm remembering, I mean, at least a half dozen conversations that I've had with other startup founders.
Mm-hmm.
I know we've talked about this a couple of times over mm-hmm. Twitter, which is that it seems to me that really successful startups in the mobile space or the web space, like anything that's like sort of got a social network to it
mm-hmm.
or it's got some kind of thing or like a consumer facing thing.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like a lot of these founders get their success when they focus on community and not when they focus on what the product does, right? Like they kind of get this kind of rabid, emotionally connected
mm-hmm.
fan base around the service or the mm-hmm. product. And it's those people's experiences with each other that really kind of keeps people coming back.
Yeah.
Would you say that that's true, or is that only true because we're dealing with dinners and people have to do that anyway?
I would say that anything that you can get your people to care about, then that's a good thing. I mean, even if people are upset. And
I notice you call them your people and not your consumers. Is that people. Like a conscious choice?
No, I think it's people in general, right? I mean, you know, we're such a social, like, sort of, you know, people business that, you know, I don't know, it's kind of cool to call them consumers, I suppose.
Yeah.
I suppose,
but everybody calls them users or consumers.
Yeah. Community.
Community.
People. I don't really call them users and consumers.
Yeah.
But maybe that's another reason why we have such a good, strong community, you know, bond. It's because maybe we don't, who knows? I mean, there's a lot of contributing factors.
But you basically solve that, you crack the nut, basically, by saying, you're coming to this event not because you're hungry.
Right.
You're coming because you want to meet interesting people.
It's about the experiences. It's actually not about the people.
Right.
People actually come because of the food. But what happens is, I mean, our demographic is very, you know, 30 to 55, 80% of them are in relationships. And so they come, and it's really cool because couples meet other couples. It's not a very singles thing. It's a very, like, cool, like, community thing that happens. Like, our larger events, strollers come out, it's families, it's friends.
So it's, if, as a CEO, do you see different parts of this business sort of unfolding then? Is it always just going to be about food? Or do you think that this is a kind of a business where you could build other value-added services on top of, you know, that phrase, everybody likes a value-added service to.
Well, I think it's very important in any business to really focus on what's working. I think a lot of startups really get distracted by all these, you know, 10 million other different things that are happening. So we definitely make sure we focus on what works.
Yeah.
In terms of the sort of value-added services, I think it's just expanding on what we already know. So we started off with just doing dish crawls. Dish crawls is for a restaurant. One night, it's a guided tour. So somebody like me would meet you at a restaurant, and then we'd go on an adventure.
I love this idea, actually.
You should totally come.
I know I should come. I've never come to these, but I think this is a great idea.
Yeah.
I've had a similar idea about, like, sort of travel.
Yeah.
And I know a BizSpark member who I won't name right now because I think he's still working on this in beta, who's doing something like this around travel, where it's like you want to show up at a place, and meet the right people, and you want someone who knows something about the thing you're about to do. Yeah. So you take them. You started with the four. Sorry, I'm jumping all over your story.
No, that's okay.
But you start
four restaurants
with
one night. It was very simple concept. And now we've branched out to start doing a bunch of different types of events. So now we're really about providing culinary experiences and adventures in any of the cities we're in.
Sure.
And so we have things like Whiskey Waltz, where it's between 200 to 1,000 people, and we do whiskey tastings, and then there's a huge party after.
Wow.
We have things like Neighbor Food, where it's anywhere, again, between 2 to 1,500 people that come out. It's 8 restaurants, and it's self-guided. So you get a map, and you just get to hop to different restaurants and try the different dishes.
Sounds like almost like a mini food festival that pops up.
Yeah.
Like it's like pop-up food festivals.
Yeah, I like that, actually, pop-up food
festival.
Thank
you. Well, I'll be taking equity then.
I might steal that.
Yeah.
So,
someone wants you to know that, I'm not going to talk about this. Someone's just saying BS, like, I love you. I'm sure it's about me. I'm sure they're talking about me. So does it still take, I had a couple more questions there. Does it still take an hour to get a conversion?
No, it does not.
So what happens now? You just tweet it out and suddenly people are like, or is it kind of have a life of its
own? It totally depends on the market.
Yeah.
You know, Edmonton for us is insane. You will tweet and then all the tickets will be sold in an hour.
That's nice.
One time we told the Edmonton community to that we were going to have the tickets be on sale at a certain time. And our system actually broke and oversold the tickets. Because
awesome. Like a Duran Duran concert.
Because too many people were buying tickets. So we actually sold an extra 20 tickets that we didn't have capacity for.
That's nice.
But, you know, you live, you learn, and, you know, it's always good problems to have.
I know. It's good to have a scale problem. So how do you how do you maintain that scale now? How are you continuing to grow? Here's a good investor question. How are you – what is your sort of growth strategy? How are you going to get bigger?
Well, we are going to – so now we're in about 125 cities, and we're going to continue growing to all the different cities in North America, U.S. and Canada.
Sure.
So we'll be in 300 cities by – March of next year.
Yeah.
We have plans to go to the UK as well. So we'll be expanding there early next year. And then we'll just sort of see what happens.
Okay. Why didn't you decide to go international right away? I mean, Canada is a little bit international, but it's sort of like a North
American. Why did we or why didn't we?
Why didn't you go internationally right away? Not excluding Canada for a moment. Yeah. Because, you know, the sort of seductiveness about dining is that great cities like London, Tokyo, Paris, Barcelona have amazing dining experiences. Mm-hmm. Why didn't you just go for these big sort of food hubs?
Well, I think part of it is because we didn't, like, you know, this was just a marketing function. Me doing a dish crawl was just a marketing function of the startup that I was trying to create.
Right.
Right.
See, I didn't know that. So that's interesting. So this was the result of something.
Exactly. Of me trying to do something else. Random. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. This adventure game for foodies online.
I see.
And then in terms of our expansion, it started happening very serendipitously. So people would hear about it. Our second city was actually Montreal.
Yeah.
And they just said, oh, I need to be a part of this because it's fun. Mm-hmm. And so I just ran, you know, I don't say no if I like helping people. And so I just started randomly teaching people how to do dish crawls in their cities.
Mm-hmm.
And then it wasn't until last year that we really formalized this like sort of ambassador program. Mm-hmm. That's pretty awesome. So that's really why.
Yeah.
We just went where it worked.
And how does the ambassador program work now?
Well, the
ambassador
program is, so I love my job because I get to do what I love to do. Mm-hmm. And I love to bring people together over food. Mm-hmm. The part I love about my job right now is that I'm able to inspire entrepreneurship in people all across the world by this ambassador program. Mm-hmm. So just like me, I was, you know, at a corporate job. I wasn't having fun. I wanted to do something more meaningful.
Yeah.
With the ambassador program, we're able to take what we know how to do, roll it out into different cities through our ambassador program, and allow other people the opportunity to do what they love and give back to the community. And that's really awesome and compelling.
So basically, people who might be sort of underemployed, maybe they're not feeling like they're getting enough out of their current job.
Yeah, or they want to do something more.
And they like the social life and the food life.
Yeah.
They can do something more.
Exactly.
This actually fits in really well. I mean, if you'd watched the show before, we've had so many startups that have kind of worked in this collaborative economy, this sort of like it's really interesting to individuals working with bigger businesses or small and medium businesses to do some kind of function of sharing.
Right.
Like, hey, it's almost like the classic thing you do in New York when you move to New York and you think you're a good looking guy is you become
one of these promoters.
No, I've never done this. But you become one of these promoters, right? Mm-hmm. And you're like, you bring girls to the club, you're popping bottles, but what you do in your daily job is you shovel poop.
Yep.
At an analyst firm and try to cold call people and get people to give your hedge fund money.
Exactly.
Right? But you don't have any power. You don't have anything. So you have this kind of glamorous life where you can connect with people.
Right.
And the really successful people
often
never do this as a full-time job. They kind of just accidentally get into it.
Yeah, yeah.
But this is happening also in different ways with like Lyft and Uber and Airbnb.
Yeah.
People are deciding that something that there is like a sort of normal part of their life can actually be a business. Is this kind of scalable behavior though? I mean,
right.
do you think once we fill out all these other niches, like, I mean, and this is kind of off the chart here, but can we have collaborative banking? Can we have people who sit at home and like just form their own banks? Do you think, or do you think that there are certain industries that cannot be touched with this kind of?
I'm not sure. I mean, banking, I don't know. I mean, I'm looking, you know, just sort of doing the Canadian and then the UK stuff and realizing.
Are you Canadian?
No, I'm not.
Your boyfriend's your fiance's.
No, he's not.
But why
I
Canada?
Love Canada. I just love it. I love Montreal. I just, you know.
She loves Canada.
I love Canada.
Yeah. Hold on. I'm going to look at some questions. Oh, did you have any, this is a great question from Aaron. Did you have any investors to grow the business or did you grow it just with your own money? Was it just the money that you cashed out from your mom's stock? That's it.
Yep. I operated with no funding for actually until this January.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's been 3.5 years now, right? January 2010 is when I incorporated.
Mm-hmm.
No funding. Earlier on this year, I met a really awesome advisor, investor. Anybody who thinks fundraising is like a we're going to go out and get fundraising is completely wrong, because I've gone through that process of pretending that I wanted to get fundraising probably 5 times now.
Yeah.
And when it actually happens, it's so natural. Yeah. So you'll know, don't push it.
Yeah.
But I've done the stupidest, naivest, awesomest
things.
Oh, well,
let's get into that. How do you, what have you done in the past to attract funding?
You know, you have to have, like, well, I didn't get any funding.
Okay, so these are the wrong things to do.
I always started preparing for fundraising and preparing a pitch deck, and I hate pitch decks. I love them now, right? But when you're like, don't know what the hell you're doing, don't know how to talk about your business, it's a very painful process.
Now, is this before you had figured out it was
a business?
This
was before. This was like, this was like 3 years ago.
So now you basically, so you have actually a focused business, so it's easier for you to actually tell that story.
Yeah, it's still a pain in the butt. But yes, when you have a real business, it's much easier. Mm-hmm. So I was going out, so this was another time I went out and tried to raise funding. I met Will Bunker. He actually founded
WhatBecameMatch.com. Okay, got it.
And so he sold it to IAC back in 99. He actually came on a Dish Girl. And, you know, he started working with us. Mm-hmm. I was looking for investment. He wanted to start advising. Mm-hmm. Then he actually ended up investing. I raised $90,000 between friends and family from, like, about January time frame. Mm-hmm. And then we sort of ran there. And then I just finished closing around. And, you know, once you have a real business, let me tell you, it's so much easier to close. Mm-hmm. It only took me 6 weeks.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, so what is an investor? So now we're moving into the investor part that I wanted to cover. Mm-hmm. Who does the question I wanted to ask you is, it was going to be, what does a mentor provide to you trying to scale up a business? Mm-hmm. Now that you actually have investors,
right?
What do they actually help you provide? Do they, I mean, what is it?
Well,
why would you have them? Like, aside the money, why would you have these people on board?
I think one thing that all entrepreneurs need to be very cognizant of is you need to do something 10 times and also have the right, like, sort of like, okay, that didn't work, I'm not going to do this again.
Yeah.
But you need to keep doing it.
Yeah.
There's so many times I've tried to get investment. There's so many times I've tried to get advisors, and so many times that totally hasn't stuck and I'd have to start completely over again.
Right.
So Will was one of the people who it was like, okay, I'm starting over again. And I've had, like, random advisors before in the past, right? Mm-hmm. But
meaning people who just thought it was cool and they wanted to help you? Or
like people that were my friends, people that were in the space, people that, you know, I mean, for some reason it just wasn't the right fit. It's kind of like dating, right? Mm-hmm. But with Will, it was just such a great fit. He helped us focus on the business. So, you know, as a startup, you're trying to do 10 million things. He said, focus on what's most important. What's most important is revenue. Mm-hmm. What's most important is you, me, not being an ambassador, but you actually running the business.
Right.
Very
back.
Integral pieces of our company.
Yeah.
Helped introduce me to a lot of people that are key to my team. I am very lucky to have a very active advisory board. I talk to each one every single week. And that really helped me sort of frame my mind of, like, okay, what does it actually mean to, like, be a real business, right?
Yeah, let's get back to that, because I asked that early on.
Yeah.
I mean, clearly you had sort of revenue streams coming in, you had excitement, you know, the sort of outward things. Like,
right.
What was the internal sense that you had that you knew that this was a business? Was there something that you were looking at in the structure of it that you knew was scalable, or was it something that just had a brand image around it?
You know, when you figure out how to make money, that's when I quit my job.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of people I see, they just say, oh, I'm just going to quit my job and I'm going to do my startup and I have savings. That is really a bad idea.
Yeah.
Unless you have...
That's like quitting your job without having a new one lined up or something.
And, you know, I mean, you know, different strokes for different folks, but it's much easier when you actually have a revenue, because I think a lot of people make a mistake of, like, oh, we're going to get revenue, and they don't realize how difficult it is. They don't realize, like, with overhead, how difficult. I mean, money goes fast.
Yeah.
You know, you think about it, if you have $100,000, if you have $100,000 overhead, $1 million just is gone in 1 year. You don't have a lot of time. It took me a long time to figure out how the hell to do the business. It took me a year. Figure out how to make revenue.
This may sound weird, but, like, go and have a drink of Diet Coke while I figure out how to say this. Do you think money finds a home much faster when you're in a business than if you're just using your own, like, if you're using investors' money, like, than if you have personal income? Like, it seems, like, let's talk about a person who doesn't have their own business, but they go to work every day, they get a paycheck twice a month, and they have that money, and they just pay their bills with it, and they save what's rest. Is that same kind of thinking work when you're running a business? I mean, does that money disappear just as fast, or does it stay around longer because you're not spending it as often? Or can you, I mean, how is any of that different for someone who might be sitting at home?
Right.
And they're like, well, I want to start a business. I'll just use my cash.
When you're using your own cash, you're definitely probably more cognizant of it, mm-hmm. of like, oh my God, I'm spending my own money. When you get investment, so I'm really glad I raised 90 in the beginning of the year.
Yeah.
Because I'm really glad I figured out how quickly that money goes. Right? Because we just raised $1 million, right?
Yeah.
So it's like, I'm holding on to that money.
Yeah.
I'm not touching it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you need to do things to build your business, but mm-hmm. if you spend that money, you're just done.
Yeah.
And then what?
Yeah. So what's the money good for? Is the money a security blanket, or is the money more of like...
The money is a security blanket.
Yeah.
If anybody thinks, I mean, this is sort of, you know, people are like, oh, congratulations for raising money. And yeah, that's really cool. Cause like, it's like, oh wow, we hit a milestone.
Yeah, but the story doesn't start. Yeah. The story starts after that.
No, it's like, I just gave away how much of my business.
Yeah.
I took a loan from somebody.
Yeah.
It's not... You know, you don't celebrate when you get fundraising. You celebrate when you have a real business. You celebrate when you get to cash flow positive.
Yeah.
You celebrate when you get acquired.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
I got it now.
Yeah.
So that's good. So presumably this stuff will be massively scalable, though, in different countries. Like if you start going to the UK.
Yes.
How about when you get to a sort of language market where it's other than English? What happens to your marketing then? I mean, that sounds like it might be a significant challenge.
Yeah.
Are you going to go to foreign language markets?
We are. Yeah. We are. Well, I think it's about figuring out. So we look a lot at other business models that have done similar things and how they've dealt with language barriers. And honestly, from a development perspective, it's actually not that difficult. You just run a script and everything translates. Mm-hmm. You actually just need somebody who can translate it for you.
Right.
So.
Back to the investor question, you had a good question from Peter. Peter wants to know, did you think that investors respected you more because you had raised your own money or used your own money to start the business and put your own skin into the game?
No, because I didn't really use my own money. I mean, I basically just bootstrapped with nothing.
Yeah.
If you can do something with nothing, then you've proven yourself and you can do a lot with money.
So presumably they were more interested in the fact that you had found a revenue stream.
Yeah, I mean,
we're bringing money into the company.
Exactly. I think the point was that we actually had a real business. I mean, our revenue has grown over 500% this year already.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just from December till now. So that is why they were interested, because we had a real business.
Yeah. And are you cash flow? Can I ask? Are you cash flow?
We're
positive
not cash
now?
Flow positive yet.
Okay, but you're getting there.
Exactly. Yeah.
Is this the kind of thing? Is it a kind of a business like a gym business where you have to keep growing in order to get to cash flow positive, or? At some point, does the community get large enough within the sort of nodes you've already tapped into?
Well, when you say keep growing, I mean, there's two different ways, right? Number one, growing a large market in itself, like growing our markets that are already in existence.
Yeah.
And then also expanding out into more markets.
Mm-hmm.
I think that both are important. But if you don't get really good at like individual markets, then you're going to constantly have that problem.
Yeah.
And that's not good.
No, it's not good.
Yeah.
So how do you keep that from happening? I mean... What are your conversations like? How big is your team, by the way?
Well, we have 140 people across the U.S. and Canada, but the core team is under 15 people.
Right.
Right.
And is it designers, engineers, salespeople?
No, it's actually all managers.
I see.
Actually, all managers. Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
We have
like
two dev people.
Two dev people. Wow. So
we're a little strapped there.
I'm gonna. So are you hiring for those kind of people?
We are.
We're
looking for somebody who's, you know, Python, Django, front end, UI, UX.
Good.
Those are all the keywords
this
I know.
Goes in, well, I got you, but this goes into my other questions. My other questions about having a business that can be mobile and web, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what do you have to think about in terms from a business perspective? What do you spend money on first in terms of building that user experience? Are you going to mobile first, or are you basing most of it on web? Because it looks like I haven't tried the mobile experience.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't looked for the mobile experience, but I see the web experience. Mm-hmm. And basically, to me,
it's very simple.
It's very simple.
Very simple. Yeah.
Yeah.
Whenever we make decisions, we always focus on the most important thing. And the most important thing is revenue. So who cares if our site looks crappy? Because if we're doing other things from a development perspective to make our business easier so we can make more money,
right?
then life is
well,
awesome.
What do you think of people like, we had David Sachs on here once, mm-hmm. who was saying that, you know, one of the things that inspires him to invest in a company mm-hmm. is not only does the product do what it says, but it also, it looks so good or it feels so good right. to have that experience that he just knows
yeah.
people are going to love it. Do you account for design in your experiences?
I mean, we've been wanting to do design for so long, yeah. but again, when you're limited with resources, you can't just yeah. be like, hey, I'm going to spend $20,000 on yeah. this design, right? If it's not broken, don't go through that entrepreneur like, oh, I want to make something look prettier because I'm bored of it.
Yeah.
Another very key thing that one of my investors has told me is, you know, in any business, right, like if you don't keep making the donuts and you get distracted, you're not going to be successful, right? So just make sure you keep doing, if you keep doing the same thing over and over and over again and you keep getting really good at that, then that's what's going to make you successful, not the things of like, hey, we can do 10 other different things, because then you're never really going to be good at one thing.
Sure. And you're a member of BizSpark too, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
yeah. Oh, so awesome.
So you're going to, okay, of course you have to plug it because
no,
I'm
no,
sitting
no,
right
I'm
here.
No, I'm serious though.
But how has it helped? Because I know that many people are always yeah. asking, I mean, yeah. people are asking me on Twitter.
Yeah.
People ask me in LinkedIn messages all the time. Yeah. So if I join, what's in it for me, basically, other than the no-cost software?
Well,
for you, maybe it was the no-cost software, but...
I mean, that's a huge piece, right? Because we use the Azure, right, mm-hmm. for hosting all our... Like, we're using... What is the...
Azure for websites?
What is the company we're using for the reporting? I don't remember right now, but anyways, we're using them to do all our reporting.
Okay.
And it's... awesome.
Yeah.
Like, and we host it on Azure.
New Relic? Right? Is it New Relic?
No, it's, and you know, it's so funny because like that.
New Relic's a great company. They're a partner.
Yeah.
That helps with your mobile analytics.
I like all their swag.
Yeah. They have cool swag. Yeah.
But no, we use that. And then, I mean, obviously the free software is great.
Yeah.
I know you guys are trying to build awesome communities and
yep.
you know, anything I can do to help out with that. I've seen you guys do some really cool meetup type things here.
Yeah. Have you felt like though that there's, a lot of people tell me that what they like about BizSpark is actually feels like there's people there that will actually answer questions or do things for them or help
mm-hmm.
them out. I mean, part of that is inviting people like yourself on the show so mm-hmm. you can get a bigger audience to paying attention to what you're doing. But do you feel that like there's something more there than just a place to plug into, pull some software out and go build your business? Or do you think that there's kind of a developing ecosystem here of people?
Yeah, it's developing. I mean, Jean has been awesome. Mm-hmm. You know, she's introduced me to, I mean, she introduced me to you.
Yeah.
She introduced me to some of your marketing people. I think outside of BizSpark, like, I know you guys have really large presence in, is it Fargo or Des Moines? I don't remember.
Des Moines and Chicago.
It's in Des Moines,
yeah.
right? So in Des Moines, and this is separate from BizSpark, but they've actually been really great in, like,
mm-hmm.
being a part of the community and helping us promote there.
Yeah.
I think all resources around you are really how you utilize them.
Yeah.
And so we haven't reached out so much to the Microsoft mm-hmm. BizSpark community, but I'm sure if we did,
yeah.
it'd be awesome.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Especially in places like in the Midwest, because I know in the Midwest, not even just Des Moines, Iowa, but
mm-hmm.
like in Omaha, like big Omaha is like a huge conference
yeah.
that
yeah.
BizSpark has always supported. And
mm-hmm.
and in Dallas, Texas, there's a guy named Taylor Cowan. It's at TCOWAN at T Cowan. There's a lot of evangelists in the Midwest.
Yeah.
Sonal P. Main is another one
mm-hmm.
on Twitter who immediately answer questions and get things going to get people into these sort of environments where they can build the stuff that they're trying to build.
Yeah.
So I feel like, you know, I want to go back to this thing you were saying earlier. If there's any value add for me for BizSpark,
yeah.
and
yeah.
we can move off of this topic in a second, it's that there are more and more people like you out there who don't really want to be just sitting in their job
mm-hmm.
doing the thing that they do and they get paid to do.
Right.
They want more of this rewarding experience of like solving a critical problem.
Right.
And what I'm finding, and this is in like Eastern Europe, this
mm-hmm.
is in Russia, this is in UK and the US, there's a whole bunch of evangelists out there who actually think like entrepreneurs. They're not like just these sort of geek software engineers who are like,
right.
oh yeah, well you just plug this into that and do this thing. They're actually thinking about your business. So in a way they're kind of virtual mentors.
Right.
I think. So that's one thing I think that's building out.
Yeah.
And I think.
And if you utilize it, right? Like I think it's very important in any, you know, as an entrepreneur to focus on what is most important. Right.
Yeah.
Again. So for us, you know, even though 3.5 years ago I was, I mean, I'm involved in the tech community. I've been involved. You know, that's how I started. But once you actually really find what your business is, it's very important to focus on that.
Yeah.
So for us, it was really focused more so on like the food communities, not the tech communities, because who cares? Like, it's not like me hanging out and going to a networking event and finding 10 new startups is going to help my business.
Yeah.
It's going to be finding the 10, you know, influencers in the food community.
Yeah.
Right.
And this is good. This goes to Aaron Holness's question. He wanted to know what kind of networking that you did. I mean, I've seen all types of networking where people just bring a whole bunch of business cards and they just hand it out to whoever just to get the name out.
Yeah.
You're talking about a more strategic kind of networking. How did you find the people that you knew
would help?
Would influence the growth of your business?
How did I find them? Well, I cast a really wide net. So I think people, like a lot of people, and I find this, I think this is like everybody's mentality, right? Like most people's mentality is, okay, we have to go to a bunch of networking events. So let's go to a bunch of networking events because you need to meet a bunch of people. That's a waste of time. I mean, you need to go to the right networking events.
Mm-hmm.
So go to a bunch of them and then figure out which ones are good and bad.
Yeah.
And then start actually developing those relationships more so.
Okay.
And the other thing is, if you're on Twitter, which you know you should be, like, you should be utilizing that as your networking place. Like,
and how do you do
it's
that?
So much easier.
Is that an automatic thing? Because I actually don't think that you can use social media in a kind of automatic way to get this kind of influence engagement.
I mean, we see it all the time, right? Like, you know, I'm part of Lean Startup Circle. I'm part of Founders Network as well. Those are two like good email lists that I sort of monitor. With Twitter, for example, it's about listening to the influencers and then finding the right people and then actually developing a relationship. So, you know, I've written blog posts with random people I've met that are, you know, in the Midwest, and we like wanted to try this like split testing thing. So we did a little, you know, we did a little
collaborative blogging.
Cute.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it works. Like, no, I think this kind of thing works.
Yeah, those types of things. And, you know, it's surprising how deep those relationships can actually go. Like, I met my first co-founder on, or one of my first co-founders. There's a lot. I met one of my co-founders on Twitter. Do you know how?
No.
So I tweeted, potentially looking for somebody to work on a project with me.
Yeah.
Right? He responded. I had no idea who this guy was. Got on the phone with him. I was like, yeah, cool. Why not? Let's do this.
Yeah.
Do you know how he found out about me? And I didn't find this until a year later of us working together. He found out about me 6 months beforehand when I was tweeting at Web2O and using the hashtag W2E.
Yes. See, I think this is the thing that I think we need to talk about. This is a very important thing.
Yeah.
Hashtags are critical for marketing. So I think networking and marketing are really the same thing. And we've talked about this. We had a PR discussion last week about this kind of thing. These things are critical because people are gathering around context and people are gathering around in the kind of serendipitous way. They're following their own interests, right? This is what they look for.
Yep.
And when you coincide with those interests, I think that's actually a powerful force for your marketing, right? I think that's where you build up that critical mass. Because I would recommend to people, if you don't mind me interjecting.
Yeah, of course.
If you're the kind of network you need to be doing is exactly what you're talking about. You start wide, narrow down to niche subjects, but powerful interests where you know that you have a real sort of personal passion for it. Spend time interacting on that stuff. This, you know, to use it once and pray for it is never going to help. Like, right? But to use it often returns reward, I think, right? And so I think people need to realize that you're not going to find a lot of automated ways to get people to love your product or your service.
Yep.
But if you spend a little bit of a time every day conversing with people and just communicating with them, you'll find that those interests actually start to align.
Yep.
And if you've ever, like I do sometimes, spend hours sort of intuitively reflecting on how all these things are coming together, I can tell you that if I write about certain things on Facebook, EdgeRank is a very powerful thing on Facebook. So if you say certain things on a certain time of the day, you will attract certain types of people to your posts, and they're different all the time. Absolutely. Like, and it also depends also where you are. So definitely if you go visit a city, if you're trying to grow growth, and I don't know why my engineers over here are laughing at me, but why are you laughing at me? You're doing really great with the graphics. Thanks. So I find with people that, is this still running on the live stream? You guys are joking over there. So if you go to a certain city, mm-hmm. find out what the interests of people in that city are. And mm-hmm. you can use geolocation. You can use some tools like Tracks, TRACX, mm-hmm. to figure out what people are talking about in a specific locality. Mm-hmm. And talk about those things if you're genuinely interested in mm-hmm. them. You'll attract those people who are on that edge,
right?
Who are going to have that communication with you.
I mean, one of the breaking points of what I did. So first off, it was very awesome. Like the girl who tweeted about me, she's still doing her thing. It's Marlouz on Twitter, Marlouz. Mm-hmm. She's the one that tweeted about me in a red dress at this conference.
Okay.
So it's good
to wear a red dress.
Yeah, she was one of, well, you know, yeah, I guess. So wear a red dress next time. But it was very integral. And then the other thing was I was watching some startup thing that was out of Texas, like very much like this, some like video type thing. And met some girl. It was Mavin Digital. And she tweeted about like a free ticket to Web2O. Mm-hmm. And then I went, and then there were some other winners. And those people, like, I still know. They're sort of still in my orbit, but not really. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's really cool, like, you know, over 3 years to see sort of where those people end up.
Yeah.
And, but, you know, those sort of things don't come. And those led to a bunch of other things, right? Like, everything's connected in your life.
Yeah. The other thing I'm hearing is something kind of like The Secret, basically, sort of just to let go and sort of follow the things that you're sort of like the impulse things that you should do.
Yeah.
And if you, that'll lead you to people who can help you. And I think the other thing is also don't be afraid to ask for help.
People are scared. It's so funny because, like, on Twitter, I train a lot of people on Twitter because mm-hmm. it's a very integral part of our business. But mm-hmm. it's like some people are really scared. Like, I don't know what to say. You know, you're at a bar. Mm-hmm. Twitter is very much like a bar, right? Like, you're at a bar. If you don't walk up to anybody, mm-hmm. what's the point?
You're not
yeah.
going to meet anybody.
Exactly. But if you go and talk to everybody, especially you're online, like, nobody's going to care. Who cares if somebody yells at you?
I always say, it's funny. I always say it this way. And this is very much also, like, it's the same. This is why I think social events are so important. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I rarely go to these events because, personally, I'm not actually an outgoing guy.
Yeah, but you can be outgoing on Twitter.
I can. What I tell people is the medium, like, your personality will kind of define the medium, because that's what digital mediums are like.
Right.
For me, they're like personality buckets, mm-hmm. and you put your personality into them, and the people who are interested will get that, and they'll take it, and they'll use it. The people who aren't will just ignore you, but you don't need the people who are ignoring you.
Yeah.
Focus on the people who pay attention. And that's the same thing as what you were saying earlier, going back to the business decision and knowing when you have a business, is that when you smoke the things that work.
You get a startup.
We shouldn't spend too much time laughing because they'll think we're actually smoking. So.
I don't see any smoke yet.
Somebody wants to know, what am I talking about? So when you focus on the things that work, there's sort of a magic thing that happens, which mm-hmm. is more people get led to that thing.
Yeah.
And they use things that work.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, Tracy.
Yes.
We're out of time.
Cool.
But it was really great to listen to the story of Dish Crawl.
Yeah.
And I hope you much success in the future, and many successes in the future. And you'll have to keep us up to date on how the company grows.
Yeah, there's going to be exciting stuff happening, so we're excited. Redesign is happening, finally.
Redesign. Okay, we're going to look forward to Redesign. Yes. It's dishcrawl.com.
Dishcrawl.com. Mm-hmm.
Okay, and if anybody wants more information on the BizSpark program, it's microsoft.com/BizSpark. So thank you to our engineers, Kenny and Corey, who have been laughing the whole time. And Tracy Lee, thank you for coming.
Thank you.
All right.